Let's have the Judiciary Committee come to order. It is 1:37 in the afternoon of Wednesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 2010. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator Coghill's here, Senator Wilkowski, myself, Senator French. We are approaching the end of session, and that means that there are scheduling problems all over the place. We've got members who are in finance. We've got members who have meetings with the governor. We've got members who have bills up in other committees. Folks are going to be coming and going, and so we will take advantage of the moment that we have to do work while we can. And while we'd schedule boards and commission confirmation hearings of some sort of highly experienced and people who had served already, which I thought would not take much time, I understand we don't have those people on the line. And so in the interest of taking advantage of the committee that we have right at the moment, let's turn to Senate Bill 284, which we amended during the last, during Monday's hearing, and we have a raft of paperwork. Each member to your right, you have a raft of paperwork. You're right. You should see the paperwork pertaining to the bill, including 1, 2, 3 amendments by either myself and Senator Coghill, as well as 2 amendments proposed by Senator Wilkowski. Let's turn to the CS. Very good. Let's start with the CS we have in front of us, which is / echo. If we could have a motion to adopt that.
So moved.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, / E is the working document before us. And in the amendments, you have 3 amendments that are helpfully titled E.1, E.2, and E.3. We'll take them up beginning with E.1. It's an amendment by myself. We'll call it amendment number 1. I'll move it and object to it. And you'll see that amendment number 1 pertains to page 4 of the CS, beginning on line 5, we insert a new subsection to basically help APOC understand, if the bill should become law, what we mean when we say director, what we mean when we say officer. This was a suggestion that came to me from the drafter, Mr. Bullard, and I'll turn to members of the committee for any questions or comments about the proposed amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Wilkowski.
This is at the request of APOC?
I don't think it was directly at their request. I wouldn't want to make that representation. But it did come to us from the drafter, and I believe it will help APOC implement this, since we're now adding the requirement that directors and officers be identified in campaign advertisements. The definitions should be helpful to them. Thank you. My staffer's reminding me that this was also suggested to us by John Patas in the Department of Law. We would have them online, but I believe they are wrapped up in the Judiciary Committee hearing on the House side that's taking place simultaneously with this one.
Just, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Please.
Just, I don't know how substantive the question is, but any rationale for adding this in Section 7 as opposed to usually definitions are at the end of the section?
Well, it's a separate bill section, but you'll see it goes right into 040, which okay. Is the long provision. It's 1513040 is a lengthy statute dealing with disclosure, and so at the end of that disclosure statute, you'd have some amendments dealing with just that section of the statute.
So what we'd be doing then, Mr. Chair, is after line 5, we would be inserting a new Section 7 and then pushing the Section 7
down.
So Section 7 would become Section 8.
Right.
So we'd really be, when we talk about in the amendment, where it says Section 7A S 151304 is amended by adding a new section, a subsection to read, et cetera, et cetera. And then it says, for purposes of E of this section.
Right. So turn back to page 3 of the bill, or the CS, and you'll see that's the meaty, lengthy reporting requirements. And on lines 12, on lines 22 and 3, we're talking about officers and directors. That's all new language in the statute, language that hasn't been there in the past. And so I think it just helps point out that a director means a member of the board of directors of a corporation or a person performing a similar function, you know, director, officer, president, vice president, secretary, treasury, principal financial officer. I think that'll be helpful, whether it's a corporation or a union, frankly, to help APOC understand who it is it's supposed to report.
Yeah, with you answering those questions, Mr. Chair, I don't have any objection to the amendment myself.
I'll withdraw my objection, see if there's any further objection. Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 1 is adopted. That brings us to E.3 and E.2. We're actually going to take them up in reverse order. We're going to bring up E.3. I'm going to style E.3 amendment number 2. Amendment number 2. That's by Senators French and Coghill. I will move the amendment and object to it. And you'll see that this pertains to page 5 of the bill, beginning on 17. And this is about disclaimer, identifying the communications that are advertised. Not so much disclosure to APOC, but disclaimer to the public about who is sponsoring the campaign ads that will be permeating the airwaves and TV. And this is basically taking the sections of Senator Coghill's amendment from earlier this week that I believe the majority of the committee found non-objectionable. It cleans up, if you look at the existing CS and look at lines 22 and 23, it just cleans up that idea to remove sort of the may identify campaign chairperson. That just doesn't seem helpful. What this does is on lines 7 and 8 of the amendment say that every person, meaning candidates, groups, non-groups, individuals, corporations, shall clearly provide the person's address or the person's principal place of business. We do that as candidates now. We say, you know, this is Joe Smith running, you know, Joe Smith for State House, and run with an address after that. And then the amendment goes on to point out that for a person other than an individual or candidate, now we're in the realms of groups, non-groups, and corporations, you have to provide the name and title of the person's principal officer, statement from the principal officer approving the communication, and identification of the name and city and state of the principal residence or principal place of business of each of the person's 5 largest contributors, if any, during the 12-month period before the date of the communication. And then the rest of the language is just conforming, getting the numbers right in the statute that's been modified. Senator Coghill, did you want to make any remarks?
Well, thanks for taking up the amendment. I think for just equity in information that we're sharing under these communications, I think this is the way to do it. I still object to the reading out loud of the 5 largest contributors, but I understand the committee's desire to do that. But it just seems to me it makes the language not only read easier, it's more easily understood, but it puts kind of parity between the candidate and the persons, the corporations and groups that we have to deal with. So except for my objections to the 5 largest contributors, and my concern is not so much that they are not known, they're going to be known in the reporting mechanisms, but this is just the communication. I think it's going to be awkward, but I'm willing to work with it in this committee. So I think this amendment is probably okay with that exception to my comments.
Thank you. I'm going to withdraw my objection, ask if there's further objection. Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 2 is adopted. We're losing Senator Witkowski to another committee. I'll point out that amendment number 3, I think, addresses some of your concerns and some of the concerns of Senator Egan about the sort of the size of the disclaimer in each ad, but we're going to have to postpone that until we get a quorum back. Senator Witkowski. Great. We'll move to other business for the time being and take this up when we get ready to. Let's turn.
1 through 11. I'm not quite sure what's going on with the 8771.
Okay. All right. Let's turn to, we'll set SB 284 then aside for the moment and turn to boards and commissions. And we have one, two, three, four, five people to have a conversation with today regarding their fitness and desire to serve on boards and commissions. And I think we've gotten at least one of those individuals online. Kathleen King, are you on the line? Kathleen King, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you for your willingness to serve on the Alaska Public Offices Commission. If you would just introduce yourself to the committee, make a short statement about why you'd like to keep serving, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Okay, my name is Kathleen King. I was appointed to the commission last year about this time. And during that time, I have helped to work on some mitigation criteria, also to rewrite some of the practices and procedures that APOC was doing. And then with the fairly new staff that's on board, it's a real pleasure to work with them, as well as the commission itself, along with the board. Along with the staff are gung ho about shaping up the commission and making it a worthwhile and a stronger tool for the public. With the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens, there's a lot of work to be done. You know that as well as I do, and I just look forward to being an effective tool and hopefully surmounting some of the problems that I'm sure this the opinion will bring to the staff and to the commission.
Ms. King, thank you. And so I just am looking over. You were appointed essentially last year. You've served just shy of a year on the commission. And how many commission? You've had some big, sort of high profile cases. The Pebble Mine case comes to mind. And I don't want to sort of get down into the weeds on that, but I guess just sort of ask you generically whether you've enjoyed sort of having to sit in judgment on big cases like that.
Well, I have enjoyed it. I'm not an attorney, but I've been involved in the legal field for the last 25 years. I've served on the bars, the Alaska Bar Association's fee arbitration and disciplinary committees. So I've had some experience in sitting as kind of an arbiter and a judge, and this just extends that experience.
Ms. King, thank you. That's all the questions I have. Let me see if Senator Coghill has any questions for you.
Oh, just Mr. Chairman, just to thank Kathleen King for her service. I truly appreciate your willingness to do that.
You're welcome.
Ma'am, thank you so much. With that, we will go ahead and turn now to Don McLean, who should be on the line. Don McLean, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
And Dr. McLean, I understand, you've got some scheduling issues this afternoon, so we're happy to take you up at this time. If you just go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee, give us a few words about your desire to continue serving on the Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar. We may have a few questions for you after you finish. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Don McLean. I'm a practicing dentist in Wasilla. I have been since 1981. Had through 4 years service in the Air Force as a dentist and came to the Valley. Worked with Kurt Menard for about a year. I'm sure everybody remember Kurt. And for the last 3 years, I've been serving on the Board of Governors for a Bar Association and as one of the three public members. And basically, I guess my consideration for reappointment was accepted by me because I feel like that some continuity with my past experience can carry over in the next 3 years. I think the uniqueness of the board is that because there's the public is so underrepresented and with very little outside legislative or executive branch influence on the Board of Governors, I think some someone that feels strongly about public support and influence, and maybe influence isn't the correct word, but input into the actions of the Board of Governors is important, and maybe my personality permits me to do that. I'm not outspoken, but I'm willing to say what I think is important at the time.
So. Thank you, Dr. McLean. I appreciate that. It is important for you to feel like you can speak out. This is a parenthetical question, but I see there's a David Eichler from North Pole. Is he a dentist as well?
Yes.
Dave is a dentist. I think presently, unless something's changed since the last time I talked to him, he's also the president of the Alaska Dental Association and the president of the Alaska Dental Board. So he's serving, he's got wearing a couple different hats there, I think, in addition to being a public member. And it's not that dentists are trying to take over the Bar Association.
I was just about to suggest that, but I'm glad you put me at ease, sir.
I don't think that could happen, actually.
Okay, enough about Mr. Eichler. Thank you for your service. I appreciate your willingness to re-up. I think it is important to have some continuity there. I'm sure it takes some time to master some of the intricacies of the Bar Association, and for you to step forward for another three-year service is very valuable from my perspective. Let me see if Senator Coghill has any questions for you.
Likewise, just gratitude for Mr. McLean's service.
Dr. McLean, thank you so much. That will conclude your interview with the Judiciary Committee. And again, thanks so much for your willingness to serve. We'll have a motion a little bit later to move you out of committee. But for the time being, we will turn now to Elizabeth Hickerson, who I hope is on the line as well. Ms. Hickerson, if you're there, welcome.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Yes, please identify yourself and your affiliation and give us a few words about your interest in continuing to serve on the Alaska Public Offices Commission.
Yes, I will. I'm Elizabeth Hickerson. By my affiliation, I'm not sure what you mean. I am a Democrat appointed to the APOC as a Democrat back in 2006. And I stepped in to fill a term. And I'm presently the chair of the commission. When I was asked if I was interested in being reappointed, I at first thought, well, why would I want to do this again? But it has been an absolutely wonderful experience. I think right now we have outstanding staff. Our director, Holly Hill, came in and basically reorganized everything, got things up and running. We are in the process of overhauling our regulations. We've got lots of different items coming before us all the time. And I just felt like I want to see some of the work that worked on be finished. And so I decided that I would put my name up for another term. And the other thing is that we have the other four commissioners are very, very hardworking people. They are dedicated to the whole mission, which is, disclosure of a variety of information to the public. And they are a delight to work with.
Ms. Hickerson, thank you. We've been joined by Senator Egan. Senator Egan, we are in the process of confirmation hearings. Speaking now to Elizabeth Hickerson, who has been with the Alaska Public Offices Commission for 4 years and has been nominated for another term. Let me just ask, because I'm curious, does the APOC work leave you room to pursue any other livelihood, or does it wind up taking over your life? I'm just curious.
Well, at times it's pretty overwhelming and consumes quite a bit of my time. The meetings that we have and the hearings that we have are a fraction of what the commissioners are asked to do. I certainly take time. My son's going to be 14 on Sunday, and so that's a handful right there. And I volunteer at his school and with my church. In fact, I'm just organizing a food drive for the food bank, so I have other time. But it is at times quite consuming.
Thank you. Those are the questions I have. Let me see if other members of the committee have questions. I see people nodding in appreciation of your willingness to continue to serve there. And as a constituent of mine, I just want to give you a personal thanks as well. Senator Egan.
Mr. Chairman, I just apologize for showing late, but it's finance all the time.
I mentioned at the outset of the hearing that scheduling is a challenge, but I appreciate you coming down to join us, Senator Egan, so thank you. With that, let's turn to Jared Godfrey, who is also an individual with whom the committee and the legislature is well acquainted. He has served for quite some time on the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. He's been renominated to the same board. I think he's been serving since 2003 for a total of 7 years service, re-upped for another three. Mr. Godfrey, if you're on the line, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and give us a few sentences about what motivates you to continue to want to serve on this commission, and we appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Jared. This is Jared Godfrey, Chair of the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, renominated here for a three-year term, one more time, as you said, and you are correct. I was first nominated early in 2003 and began serving January, February at that time. And at the time, I had, my purpose was having had family members that were victims of violent crime at that time. It was, it seemed to be a natural fit and something of a cathartic process for myself in making something good come of what had happened to my family at that time. Since then, I've learned a lot and have been able to help, other board members that have served on this board, help us as a board make a difference in a lot of innocent victims of violent crimes, persons' lives in Alaska. And we've been able to work hand in hand on a number of policy issues with the legislature, certainly yourself included, Mr. Chair. I've always found you very helpful, and most of the legislature there as well. Certainly, Senator Coghill, as well as back in his days in the House, has always been very helpful and very welcoming to the board when we come down there. And the board certainly appreciates that. And I will say that in part is why, and I'm sure this is my last 3 years, I'm sure of it. I've said that before, but I think this is the real deal. But it's part of why I'm willing to continue, because the cooperation and the compassion and the forward-looking and willing legislature that we have as a partner in dealing with victims and victims of violent crime and issues of crime in the state of Alaska has been, I think the board has been able to look back and say, we've been able to make headway in some areas, and we can see tangibly and substantively that we've made a difference in some people's lives and in some class of people's lives, in that that's pretty meaningful. And because the legislature has been so available to the board and willing to assist us, it's pretty easy for me to continue to move forward in another three-year term. So that's the extent of what I have to say.
Mr. Godfrey, thank you so much. I don't have any questions for you. I'm just too well acquainted with your contributions and your abilities to have much in the way of inquiries. I'm thoroughly satisfied and thrilled that you're willing to continue to serve. Questions from members of the committee? Senator Coghill.
Just to extend my gratitude as well. I know this sounds like a broken record, but I am just so grateful for the people who are willing to serve on these boards and take the time out. And Mr. Godfrey has proven to be a formidable advocate. And so thank you. And if this is the last 3 years, I know it'll be a full 3 years for you. But don't ever say never.
Duly noted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Egan?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Jared, Dennis Egan, I just want to thank you for meeting with me during the interim and bringing me up to speed on a lot of these issues. I appreciate that.
It's
through the chair. Senator Egan, it was great to meet with you. I enjoyed our time with you. I certainly enjoyed your willingness to be brought up to speed and educated about what the board does and its purpose. As I saw you and your aide ask some very probing questions, and that's always, you know, that always makes us happy because we've got somebody that's engaged that wants to learn about that. And I know you kind of came in midstream, but I do appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Jared.
Thanks so much, Jared. Let's turn now to Richard Larson. Richard Larson, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd go ahead and put yourself on the record, you can describe for us your interest in the parole board.
Well, I served 29 years with the Department of Corrections in the state of Alaska, starting with youth as a youth counselor. And I went from a correctional officer to a sergeant to assistant, and my last place before I retired was Mattsu Pretrial as a superintendent. And I feel that the 29 years of service and training that I received with the state of Alaska can be utilized well on the parole board. I am on another board right now, on the Matanuska School Board, and to combine those two boards it will be a real good challenge because you can see why youth go wayward and be able to help those coming out of jail to help their families. So what I'm hoping for is to be a very positive influence on this board.
And let me just ask, Mr. Larson, during your time with corrections, did you have occasion to attend any parole board hearings?
I was not the actual hearings, no. No, sir. I was involved, oversaw probation and parole and various units such as writing pre-sentence reports and things like that and getting all the information for the parole board. The parole board would come into the facilities, but I actually did not attend any of their hearings. We just did the prep work for them.
Sure. But you have, just so the record is clear, it looks like you've been involved in corrections since 1976, beginning with your time at McLaughlin. Is that right?
Yeah, I started at McLaughlin Youth Center in March of 76, and I retired from the as the superintendent, Matthew Preacher, in 2005, 29 years.
And that's a lengthy history with corrections, and I'm sure you'll bring an excellent perspective to the parole board, and I'm sure the public would be thrilled to know that they're going to get a member on the parole board who has spent a long time in corrections. I think that's probably exactly what the public would like to see there, listening to appeals for parole, someone who is very familiar with the system. Those are the questions I have for you, sir. Let me see if other members of the committee have questions for Mr. Larson. I don't hear or see any. Thank you so much for your willingness to step forward. This is going to be your first appointment to the parole board, and I wish you good luck in your service.
Thank you very much, and I just want to say I appreciate the work that you are all doing down there in Juneau.
Very good. Thank you, sir. That brings us, last but certainly not least, to Quinlan Steiner. Mr. Steiner, are you on the phone?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, this is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska.
Welcome to the committee. You put yourself on the record now if you can tell us about your interest in continuing as the public defender.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been the public defender now for 4 years, and this is my fifth year. And I came in to this position with the idea of making some changes that I thought would make the agency stronger and more efficient, and those plans have progressed and continue to progress. We've made some successes in implementing them and saw the fruits of that. But they're not finished. They're plans that are ongoing, and I've enjoyed implementing them and would enjoy continue working on those plans. In particular, they relate to recruitment and retention. Is one area that I've worked strongly on is boosting our recruiting program and our training program in an effort to have better trained attorneys. I think it's better outcomes for the cases and the clients, but also allows the agency to operate more efficiently. Our turnover has gone down. I think our experience level has gone up. And so that has been a success, I believe. Also, I've attempted to restructure the agency in a manner that I think promotes better supervision of the cases. We've broken the agency down into regional sections and three separate divisions. It allows our supervisors to more directly control the review of cases and how they're conducted. Not only do I think that provides better representation and better service for our clients, but I think it's done more efficiently. In fact, in the last year, we've held variable litigation costs down at travel and expert requests, and expect to do that this year. And I think it's directly related to that regional structure. And I think that's done not just no harm to representation, but I think it's actually improved the quality of the representation when those aspects of cases are reviewed more closely. And another area that I've been focusing on is the information management. You know, there's a lot of paper that's pushed around in this work, and our agency has been focused on attorneys. We've been attempting to focus on paralegals in an effort to make sure that the paperwork part of this process is managed as efficiently as possible, instead of having attorneys doing discovery and document management. We're having that done by paralegals, where I think it's done more efficiently. Again, better outcomes for the cases and better representation for clients. You know, one of the current initiatives that I'm working on is electronic discovery. It still remains primarily a paper process, but I'd like to see that shift to electronic transfer of information. And I'm working on that through the Criminal Justice Working Group and have procured and implemented a new case management system to help accommodate that. So that's kind of a overview of what I'm interested in doing and have been working on.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. I'm looking over your resume. I guess I had not noted in the past that from 1990 to 1992, you served as a National Bank of Alaska loan officer in a little town named Juneau, Alaska. Maybe you could tell us about that.
Yeah, that's correct. It was kind of nice going back to Juneau and going back to the town I lived in for a while. When I got out of college, I went to work in the National Bank of Alaska's management training program and trained in all parts of bank management, and eventually became a loan officer in Juneau. Enjoyed the experience, but ultimately felt that that wasn't the career for me, and left banking and went to law school, and eventually public defender. In fact, I became a public defender right when I graduated from law school, and I've been one ever since.
Thanks. Those are the questions I have for you. I mean, I know you professionally and personally, and you have my full confidence. I'm frankly glad you're willing to step forward and serve again. Let me see if Senator Egan has any questions for you.
Looks like no, Mr. Chu. I don't have a conflict. I didn't get a loan from him.
So. He turned you down? Or?
No, I just didn't. Sorry, Quinlan, I didn't apply.
Okay, fantastic. We've just been rejoined by Senator Coghill. Senator Coghill, we're just wrapping up with the interview of Quinlan Steiner for his second appointment to the position of public defender for the state of Alaska. Any questions, comments from you while we're here?
Comments, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Mr. Steiner, thank you for your work. You've been so responsive and have helped me understand the way we do our public defending in Alaska. I am very grateful. So it's, once again, just an expression of gratitude.
Thank you.
With that, that concludes the interviews we had for the members today, and having a quorum right at the moment, I'm going to take advantage of that. I'm going to go ahead and propose this motion, and the motion is this: in accordance with AS 3905080 and AS 1885030, the Judiciary Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Board of Governors of the Alaska Bar, Donald McLean; Public Defender, Quinlan Steiner; Alaska Public Offices Commission, Elizabeth Hickerson; Alaska Public Offices Commission, Kathleen King; Violent Crimes Compensation Board, Jared Godfrey. This does not reflect an intent by any members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, the names will be forwarded. Let's take a short at ease while we sign the report. Let's go back on the record. We will, having completed the confirmation hearings, we will turn back to SB 284, the campaign disclosure and disclaimer bill. And I'm glad we've been joined by Senator Egan, because the next amendment, and you have a stack of them here, Senator Egan, and the one we're going to take up is that one on top, which I'm going to style amendment number 3. It's backslash E.2. I will move the amendment and object to it and explain that this, to a certain degree, lays on top of amendment number 2, which had been just passed before you came in by Senators, myself and Senator Coghill. The idea behind amendment number 3 is to sort of separate the different disclaimers that are required to the public when the advertisement is in print versus when the advertisement is either radio or television. The idea is to reduce the amount of speaking that has to take place in an audio advertisement in response to concerns by Senator Egan, and I think I'm sure by others, that the disclaimer would become too onerous if we require the recitation of the contributor's principal place of business and state, that by having to read off all those geographic locations, we're going to blow the disclaimer up to the point where the there's no room left for the ad. And so it was out of that concern that I had Mr. Bullard draft this amendment to do that, to simply reduce the amount of airtime necessary for the disclaimers required in these new ads. Again, these pertain only to ads not by individual candidates, but by corporations. So discussion of amendment number 3. Senator Egan.
Mr. Chair, thank you for this amendment. Actually, in talking to some people in the electronic media the past few days, they didn't really care if it was amended or not, because if the individual or the corporation or whoever is sponsoring the ad wanted to give a 30, well, the electronic media could charge them for 60, because it would take them 30 seconds to do the disclaimer. So,
well, I guess I'm kind of sorry to hear that, but I
appreciate it, Mr. Chair.
I think it will. You know, I just think it makes it a little more manageable.
And I think we can go through one election, Mr. Chair, and if there are some tweaks we have to do, then we can solve that next year.
You raise a good point in general about the bill, and it's a point worth making while we just have a minute, and that is, you know, this is largely us trying to envision the future, a future that we have not experienced in the past. We're going to get as much in the bill as we can, make it as strong as possible, but I have no doubt that we will be revisiting this topic in the not-too-distant future, because we have not been through an election cycle where we've had the kind of spending and participation in elections by corporations in the past. With that, I will remove my objection to amendment number 3, ask if there's further objection, and hearing and seeing that amendment number 3 is carried. There are still two amendments left to discuss before the bill leaves committee, but they are under the, they're being brought forward by Senator Wilkowski, and so we'll give him an opportunity to come back and discuss them when he's finished in the Hess Committee. And so for the time being, we will once again set aside SB 284, thank our hardworking records keepers for trying to keep up with us as we jump around today, and turn now, and we have been joined by Senator Dyson, we'll turn to SB 297, an act providing for the release of property in the custody of a law enforcement agency to an owner under certain conditions. And welcome him and his staff. Have a seat there at the table. We'll turn the proceedings over to you, and just identify yourself and go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for hearing this bill. Yeah, I'm Senator Fred Dyson from Eagle River, and with me is my chief of staff, Chuck Kopp. We have some amendments. Yeah. And this bill was very well intended from its start, but it has been refined as we've gone forward, and we have, I believe, an amendment we'd like to propose for our committee substitute, and Mr. Kopp will explain that.
Excellent. Mr. Kopp, welcome. Put yourself on the record and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Senator French. My name is Chuck Kopp. I work for Senator Fred Dyson. Appreciate Committee's time hearing Senate Bill 297 today. This is an act providing for the release of property in the custody of a law enforcement agency to the owner under certain conditions. What this does is specifically give to property owners the protection under law to ensure their property is held as evidence by prosecution and the defense only as long as necessary for the item to be physically retained without jeopardizing the case. It provides in Title 12, the Code of Criminal Procedure, an identifiable process for an individual to petition the court for the recovery of property in those circumstances where they are not otherwise able to reach an agreement with interested parties on the return of their property. We could give you both anecdotal and systemic evidence. I'm well aware that the chair is a former prosecutor. And in our own discussions with prosecutors around the state, there indicate that some refinements in the process could improve the expeditious manner of returning property, especially property of significant value, property of small businesses, in cases where there is demonstrable loss, and a return of that in an expeditious manner would benefit owners. Last session, Senate Bill 158 and another bill dealing with return of property was endorsed by the Alaska Peace Officers Association, and this bill here, including the committee substitute, Senate Bill for this bill, has also been reviewed, and we have the blessing of the Alaska Peace Officers Association to tell the committee today that they fully endorse the committee substitute that we also have before you. What the committee substitute does is it additionally identifies a period of time that a request for return of property must be acted on, and also says that reasonable notice must be given to interested parties that the owner is asking for their property to be returned. And I could refer the committee to the committee substitute. There on line 8 is where those words are added from the original. It says, within 10 days after receipt of a request under A of this section and following reasonable notice to interested parties, the agency shall request a hearing before the court to determine
the property. Excuse me, and this is the R version, I believe?
That's correct. And Senator Dyson, thank you for prompting me. We should, at this point, move to adopt / R as our working document. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman?
So moved.
So moved that we adopt the R version of CS for Senate Bill 297.
Thank you, Senator Cockhill. Is there objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, / R is before. Senator Dyson? Just anything to conclude on that point?
No.
Excellent. Let me ask, you do have a nice letter of support from the Chief, from the Peace Officers Association that goes a long way to letting us know that law enforcement is going to be on board. Department of Law, have they been consulted? I see actually Annie Carpinetti here. We may turn to her in a moment. Anything else you want to tell us about the bill?
Well, I have enough scientific training to know the plural of antidote is not data. But three or four things come. I dealt with a custom boat builder that was doing a $300,000 very specific purpose-built boat, and a couple guys walked in, talked about future business. He had $70,000 to $80,000 with electronics sitting on the floor. It disappeared that night. He quickly got in touch with the police, pawn shops, Craigslist, eBay, found most of the gear, and one of the pawn shops that he found some of his gear in had a video camera, got a picture of the crook's vehicle license, and 8 months later, cops still had all his gear, and he had to go out and repurchase it, you know, which ate up all his profit margin. I was talking with our alleged legal people here. They told me about a single mother here in Juneau. Her car was stolen. It was 3 years before she could get the car back. And a family here apparently that has been 15 years waiting for some very precious but valueless family mementos to get back. In the community where you and I live, Mr. Chairman, many dirt moving contractors, if they have a piece of equipment stolen, they don't call the cops. because they can't afford to have the equipment hung up while they're waiting for the process. And we passed here a couple of years ago, I think when two of you were here, just recognizing a fisherman that his net stolen, you know, we passed a special piece of legislation to get it back so he can continue to make a living. And I had breakfast with Justice Fabe and Carpinetti, and we talked about this, and they both said, you know, in essence, as you know, our state law is adequate on this. It doesn't get the proper attention, and the process often doesn't work for the victim. One of my good friends, we worked here 6-7 years ago on what called restorative justice, trying to put the restoring of the victim to a pre-offense condition as quickly and easily as possible, and this is just one piece that tries to make it work.
Thank you, Senator Dyson. Questions for the bill sponsor or his able staff? I don't see any. Thanks again for bringing the bill forward. Let's turn to the Department of Law and just see if they have a perspective on the bill. Ms. Carpinetti is here. Welcome. Please have a seat. Identify yourself. Let us know how the Department of Law views the bill.
Thank you. I guess I something happened to my schedule. I didn't realize this bill was on for today until I got over here, so I apologize if I'm not as prepared as I would like to be. This is a great idea. Getting evidence back to victims of crime is really important. It's not just a great idea. It's very important, as you know, anecdotes that you've heard. But the problem is that sometimes the state has to keep it for evidence in a procedure, in a criminal procedure, and it's not just the state who has an interest in it, it's the defense bar too. I'm concerned about the 10 days that's a hearing within 10 days of a request. That's a concern that I'd like to think about and talk to the sponsors about. And I'm also concerned that everybody gets to weigh in on it, the defense bar as well as the prosecution. And possibly we should cross-reference the legislature at this very time is considering bills requiring retention of evidence for a long period of time, and we tried to deal with people's cars and by allowing cuttings to be taken off of it. But I'm concerned about the 10 days, and I'm concerned about the defense bar weighing in, because if the police have to give it back, we may not be able to use it as evidence anymore, and we may need it. And this has been a problem for years. Back in the 1970s, we tried a program to photograph evidence when possible. Sometimes that works. Sometimes the parties want the actual evidence in court, because once you give it back, you lose the chain of custody. So I just have a few concerns. Generally, I think it's a good idea. We would support it in concept, but I'm concerned about these few things.
Ms. Carpinetti, thank you. We'll welcome Senator Wilkowski back and Senator McGuire to the committee. We are just concluding a hearing on SB 297, Senator Dyson's bill to provide for the lease of property. We've heard a presentation from the bill sponsor. We've just heard that the Department of Law has a couple of concerns. They like the concept but have concerns about the 10 days, as well as the perhaps need to get the defense bar in the loop should the hearing take place, as well as how this bill meshes with SB 110, the bill requiring preservation of evidence that we just passed out of the Senate today. So we will set the bill aside, but I'll let Ms. Carpinetti know that I'd like to move the bill next Monday. So if you can bring us some concrete ideas about how to address your concerns before then, that'd be most welcome. Thanks so much. So in the continuing hopscotch that is today's scheduling, let's turn for a moment to SB 202, Senator Davis's bill that we had under consideration for a hearing or two, and we have before us a just wait till we move this bill if you don't mind. We have before us a committee substitute backslash E. If we could have a motion to adopt that backslash.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved that we accept backslash E as the working document. Is there objection?
E.
Echo. Okay. Yep, should be the backslash before you. Then that brings the CS before us. The CS was prepared at my request to add gender identity to the list of those improper objects of crime. As we add that to the list, we provide a definition of gender identity, also added to the aggravator for the same reason, sexual orientation. My intention to put those ideas into the bill as it goes on to the Finance Committee. We've heard any comment from the bill sponsor, the bill sponsor representative. We have Mr. Obermeyer here.
Mr. French and members, thank you for bringing this bill before the committee. I'm Tom Obermeyer, representing Senator Davis's office. She would be here, but for the fact that she is holding a Health and Social Services Committee meeting at this time. But this has been a very important bill for her, and it's been felt that we needed a hate crime statute. And if you wish, I could read the sponsor statement, or we could move forward. I do have in our possession now for the first time the CS for Senate Bill 202, 26LS1097/E as an echo. And I do recognize that you have added the gender identity identification to the bill, as well as adding to the aggravator statute under Title 12 the same. And I think that's appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Obermeyer. With that, we have heard from the bill sponsor. We've got the CS before us. Committee discussion or a motion. Senator Egan.
I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 202, Judiciary /E.
From committee?
From committee.
Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, I'll object.
You want to speak to your objection, Senator Coghill?
We had a little discussion on this last time, and in my view, the new crime that we're bringing up here that is based on motivation of prejudice, bias, or hatred, whether it would be with gender identity or anything else, I just object to. I think the crimes that we have now to deal with cover these very well. I did notice, though, that you put it in the aggravator section as well, which, in my view, it more properly should end up in the aggravators, because the motive being a primary crime puts it on kind of a parity with the act, and I'm not willing to go there just yet, so I'm going to object to it.
And I'll just, I guess I'll point out, as a former prosecutor, I am extremely familiar with and have worked very often with the idea of proving an individual's intent to a jury. It is not an easy task. I believe this statute will be used, should it become law, extremely infrequently, because proving intent is very, very hard. And before any citizen is convicted of this crime, a jury would have to decide unanimously, beyond a reasonable doubt, that the conduct was directed for the reasons listed in the statute. So I think I think it's a good discussion, but that's sort of my view as a person who's worked with the statutes. Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Coghill.
No.
Senator Wilkowski.
Yes.
Senator McGuire.
No.
Senator Egan.
Yes.
Senator French.
Yes.
3 yeas, 2 nays.
On a vote of 3-2, the bill leaves committee, and with that, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report.
We're back on the record. We will turn for the third time to SB 284 in our relentless drive to finish our work on this bill and move it out of committee. Senator Egan, thank you so much for making time, and we send you back with our best regards to the capital budget, and you give the co-chairs our warmest welcomes. Make sure they know we're thinking about them. SB 284, we turn now to a pair of amendments brought to us by Senator Wilkowski. I will turn the proceedings over to you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You want an amendment number 4?
Let's. Is that / number 4?
Yeah.
Yeah, 4?
It's E4. Would that be amendment 4?
That'll be amendment number 4.
I would move amendment number 4.
I'll object to it for the purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually a section that is in the House version of the bill. And just in reading that version and looking at achieving some parity between the two, it seemed like a reasonable provision. I think it was introduced by Representative Lynn on the other side. And it is an attempt to address the issue of foreign nationals participating in our elections. Essentially what it says is that a foreign national may not directly or indirectly make a contribution or expenditure or make an express or implied promise to make a contribution or expenditure. It then goes on to define foreign national. It's very similar to the federal law, and in speaking with our legal on this, who unfortunately is unavailable today, Mr. Bullard felt that this was an area where we could go. Didn't seem to think this would run afoul of any constitutional regulations or laws or anything. So I would move the amendment, Mr. Chair.
And I will, just for the purposes of discussion, sort of maybe expand a little bit. We have two legal opinions. Mr. Bullard's been very busy in the last 2 days. There's a legal opinion addressed to you, Senator Wilkowski, dated today. A legal opinion addressed to me, also dated today. That's right, on the 17th. Yeah, Mr. Bullard's been working hard. And this really raises the issue of preemption. I'm going to just read a little bit from his memo. The Federal Election Campaign Act prohibits any foreign national from contributing, donating, or spending funds in connection with any federal, state, or local election in the United States, either directly or indirectly. Because federal law already clearly prohibits foreign nationals from making campaign contributions, expenditures, and independent expenditures in federal, state, and local elections, a state effort to legislate in this area may face a preemption challenge. And so that's kind of the legal question the committee is confronted with by the amendment. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, nothing further. It does what it says. It's very similar to the House version, and people have questions, happy to try to answer.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coghill.
I've started to digest this, but it sounds to me that if we have a corporation that is doing business in America, has a subsidiary in Alaska, and has part ownership in other parts of the world, I would just use like the Ford Motor Company, they would under this be prohibited. Is that the way I understand it?
Mr. Chair, I don't believe that is the case.
Okay. Actually.
If a company is, let's say Ford had a foreign entity.
Just as a point of order, I think the concerns that you just raised are more addressed by what will be amendment number 5.
Okay. All right.
So just so we're doing one thing at a time.
I must confess, I read a little bit of both and probably got them cross-wired. So sorry, I'm working on that.
Yep, fair enough. I mean, this amendment number 4 says a foreign national. The other amendment talks about a person that's owned or controlled by a foreign national. So this one is directly to that individual, not so much to the corporation.
And if I could, Mr. Chair,
and
to answer Senator Coghill's question, if Ford could participate, Exxon could participate, if they were, we do not define foreign national in that way. However, if Ford had a branch in Indonesia, that branch could not contribute to an Alaska election, just from the corporate level. And this tracks fairly closely, in my understanding, to the federal law. And so When I talked to legal, my understanding of this area law is that, based on the Supreme Court case, it's a little bit unclear to the extent to which foreign nationals can participate in elections. The Ledge Legal believes that on the federal level, a law like this, I believe, is in place, actually. The question is, does it apply to state, local, or local elections? And that's simply what we're trying to do, is extend that.
Let me see if we've got three people online to answer questions. Jason Barndice from APOC, John Potassin from the Department of Law, Holly Hill from APOC. I'm just going to guess that probably the only person that might want to jump in here is Mr. Potassin. Mr. Potassin, have you followed the conversation up till now?
I just got in on the tail end. I was over House before 9, but I can answer any questions.
Sure. The issue is an amendment number 4 proposed by Senator Wilikowski prohibiting expenditures by foreign nationals in connection with election under this chapter, or make a contribution or expenditure, or make an express or implied promise to make a contribution or expenditure in a state election. And we're just discussing the level of federal preemption, and we're aware that a similar provision is in the House bill. I don't know if you've opined about that, but if you have some thoughts, we'd be happy to hear them.
Great. There is no conflict between the federal law and the proposed law. The only variation of federal preemption that could possibly apply is field preemption, which occurs only when there's a pervasive scheme of federal regulation that shows that Congress really intends to be the exclusive regulator in an area. It doesn't seem to be the case that the federal government is the only entity that would be regulating foreign national participation in something like a state and municipal election. So the preemption issue, I don't see as too much of a concern here.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Potassin. We've also been joined by Mr. Bullard, who has likewise been in two places at one time this afternoon. Mr. Bullard, we are on amendment number 4, drafted by you for Senator Wilikowski, /E, .4. Any amplification or anything else to add on the issue of preemption beyond what was given to us by Mr. Potassin?
Good afternoon, Chairman French, members of the committee. I would just echo Mr. Potassin of the Department of Law that there may be some preemption risk. This provision is drafted in such a manner that it is applicable to the extent permitted by federal law. This is included to mitigate as much as possible any sort of preemption concern, but I don't know if it's an ironclad proof against such a legal challenge.
Mr. Bullard, thank you. Questions or comments from members of the committee for either of the advisors we have on the line, Mr. Potassin or Mr. Bullard? Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to withdraw my objection to number 4. It seems to me that this is a provision worth having, and at worst, we get a little fight about preemption, and we wind up relying on federal protections and not our own, but it seems to me that Senator Wilikowski has done a good job of drafting this as tightly as possible with the help of Mr. Bullard. So any further objection to amendment number 4? Hearing and seeing none, it carries. That brings us to amendment number 5, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number 5.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Why don't you describe what this amendment would do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is E.5. And what this does, Mr. Chair, is prohibits any foreign national from making an expenditure, any foreign national at all. And so this is a much broader attempt. And what it does, and I've sort of wrestled with this issue, we don't allow foreign nationals to participate in our elections. We don't allow foreign corporations to participate in our elections. And I think there's good reason for that. And the concern that I've had is, what do we do about American corporations, Alaskan corporations that have ownership interests held by foreign nationals. And so this is an attempt to do that. And that and so what this would do is to prohibit any person, which is foreign, any corporation, union, foreign national, from making an expenditure in an election. So if a corporation had stockholders that were non-Americans, they would not be able to participate in making expenditures.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Let's turn to questions from members of the committee. Well, Senator Coghill.
So the question then is, if, for example, we live in this multinational world, unfortunately, with corporations. So let's just say we have a corporation doing business in Alaska that has a subsidiary that has a incorporated in Alaska, but one of their directors is one of these foreign nationals. Then they would be prohibited. But would that those within the company who are residents of the state, citizens, then be able to be put in as principals under our reporting laws? I guess that's kind of because I think they will trade people within some of those companies, even though they might be either wholly owned or partially owned, because I think this law says wholly or partially.
Mr. Chair, if I could, that is correct. If a corporation has is owned or controlled in part by a foreign national, then they would not be entitled to make an expenditure.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, please, that wouldn't preclude those who are part of the corporation within the state from having their voice. And I guess this is where I think it's going to get tested in America with how much voice does a corporation really have. But trying to figure out what do we mean here. The corporation itself or the individuals within a corporation seem to me like we're now kind of driving into a separation there. Or am I misunderstanding here?
You are absolutely correct, Senator Kaka.
Okay.
The intent is to, if there is foreign ownership or control, then they will not be permitted to make an expenditure under this amendment.
But Mr. Chairman, maybe I'm reading two different amendments here. So this one talks about,
I'll just jump in. This is Senator French. I think the operative language is on line 7. A person, meaning a corporation or a group or non-group, union that's owned or controlled in any part.
That's the part I was getting at.
I think that's going to attract a lot of attention. That's the language that's going to attract a lot of attention. So just to complete the thought, anything else, Senator Coghill?
No, thank you very much.
Why don't we turn to Mr. Bullard, who we have on the line. And Mr. Bullard, before you got on, I wanted to thank you for the immense amount of work you put in up to including two high-quality memos just today on the legal thicket and entanglements and issues that we're confronted with in this area, particularly the one you sent to me this morning covering the First Amendment, covering privileges and immunities, equal protection, preemption. It's an impressive body of work you're building over there. But let's turn to some of the concerns you expressed regarding this amendment in a memo both to me and Senator Wilikowski.
Chairman French, members of the committee, if I could just raise a few points from the memo that accompanied this amendment.
Go ahead.
This amendment paints with a broad brush. And I think that because any large publicly traded corporation is likely to have some foreign shareholders, that a court would likely interpret this provision, if enacted, as an indirect prohibition against independent expenditures made by large corporations or anyone so affected. I think there are equal protection issues, too. If a large corporation, say AT&T, has one foreign shareholder, 0.000 percentage ownership interest, that domestic corporation would be treated differently than a domestic corporation that through mere chance has no foreign shareholders. And I think that that raises an equal protection concern. So we have First Amendment and associational and equal protection issues that could be raised by this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the press of time, we drafted this amendment yesterday. And Mr. Bullitt has done really a phenomenal job. I appreciate all his hard work. We just got the amendments today. I'll withdraw the amendment. I don't want to put forward something that I don't believe a court would uphold. But I do think it's an important principle, and I do think I'd like to work on it. And maybe we need to identify percentages of ownership or raw amounts. But I do have concerns that we are opening the doors to foreign nationals influencing our election, and this was my attempt to try to do that. I understand there are concerns about the constitutionality of it, and so I'll withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. If I could do this, I certainly would. These individuals can't do this acting alone, even though they have an insignificant ownership of a company doing business in Alaska. We may or may not be fulfilling their desires and allowing the company they own stock in to influence our elections. We do have a Supreme Court decision to deal with, and I guess we've been trying to craft a bill that will stand up to the beating it may take in other committees. But that's all before us. In any event, are there any other amendments coming to us on SB 284? With that, we've opened and closed public testimony. Committee discussion or a motion? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that the committee move out CS for Senate Bill 284/ECHO to the next committee of referral, along with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
As amended. Thank you for the correction. Is there objection to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, just a brief objection.
Senator Cogdell.
Not to hold it up or even cause it to vote, because I think it should go out. But I still... I tend to agree with the last amendment in concept, so I think if there can be language found. And then I will just remain concerned about the way we put in the top five contributors. I want you to understand that I still will be looking for a solution to that. You may hear of that somewhere along the way, but I'll do some studying on it. But I wanted to say that I appreciate the diligence with which you put this forward, I think this is a must-pass piece of legislation this year. So the committee has done a lot of work on it. I just wanted to share the appreciation with you, Mr. Chairman. So thank you, and I'll with no further objection.
Thank you, Senator Coghill. Without objection, then the bill is moved from committee, and at 2:57, we are adjourned.